And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, The Search, was written by Virginia Mazur and is based in part on the book Lillian Wald, Neighbor and Crusader by R.L. Dufus, published by the Macmillan Company. It is one of a series of programs dramatizing outstanding moments in American Jewish history.
Now, more than ever, it seems to me, we need some greatness in our lives. But the trouble with greatness is that it eludes us. It's the stone smile on the marble statue, the bowl of waxed fruit we admire but dare not touch. We can't get our teeth into greatness. That's why when they asked me to do a story about her, I was uneasy. I made many false starts. Then one day I tore up everything I'd written and went out to see if I could find for myself a flesh and blood woman behind the mask. I took a subway downtown and came up and out into a part of the city I did not know. I saw a brick forest, untouched by nature, buildings and more buildings stretching on in unbroken lines, and children, herds of children. This was their breeding ground, it seemed. A girl in a red sweater was jumping rope, her pigtails bobbing as she chanted her chorus.
Margarita, wash your feet, the ball of house across the street. One, two.
Pardon me.
Hey,
wait a minute.
I missed.
Oh.
You scorned.
I'm sorry. But can you tell me, what place is this?
It's New York City. What's the matter? Don't you know where you are?
Oh, yes, I know it's New York City. But what's this place right here? This pavement where we're standing? All these buildings? Do you live here?
What do you want to know for? My mom says don't talk to strangers. Yes, I live here, up down the fifth floor. You can see our windows. There's an elevator, self-service.
And what's this place called?
Well, can't you see? It's a project, a housing project.
Mm-hmm. And what's the name of the project?
Lillian Wald Houses.
Say that again. Say it slowly.
Lillian Wald Houses. That's what I said, Lillian Wald Houses.
Thank you. And do you know why it's called that? Who was Lillian Wald?
I don't know. Somebody, a lady, I guess. Somebody great. As the super, I want to jump my rope.
Margarita, Washington, the Bonner House
is across the street.
One, two, three, four, five.
Well, what do you want?
Are you the super?
Yeah, that's right. Who are you?
I want to find out about this project. Why is it called the Lillian Wald Houses? Who was Lillian Wald?
Hey, who sent you? You from the city?
No, I'm on my own. Who was Lillian Wald?
A lady, I guess. Somebody famous.
Famous for what?
Look, mister, I don't know what she was famous for. I come from Jersey City. Why don't you ask the cop on the corner?
Hey, you. Can't you read the sign?
Walk on the green, not in between. You want me to give you a ticket?
No, thanks, officer. I just want to ask you a question. Who was Lillian Wald?
Lillian Wald? Oh, she was a pretty important person. They named those houses over there after her.
I know, but what did she do?
Well, she was before my time, but a cousin of mine knew her. She got him out of jail once, as a matter of fact. Put up a bail for him.
Was she a lawyer?
No, she wasn't a lawyer.
Well, what was her profession?
Well, you got me there. I guess you might say it was people. Look, if you want to know about Lillian Wall, why don't you go over to Henry Street? They'll tell you all about her over there.
The That same afternoon, I stood in front of 265 Henry Street, the main building of the Henry Street settlement. I stared for a long time at the prim red brick houses with the dark green shutters, the classic doorway with the bower of ivy and geraniums overhead. I touched with my hand the polished brass knocker and thought of the countless lives that had gone in that discreet door and come out again changed. Then I turned away without knocking. It was too soon for Henry Street. The Henry Street settlement was the flowering of her genius. I wanted to go back to the place and the time where the seed was sown.
I was a spoiled child. The spoiling began almost as soon as I was born, on March 10th, 1867. Both my mother's and my father's people were immigrants, Polish and German Jews, who came to America looking for a freer air, a wider world for their children. But they were not scarred and bitter by misuse, my parents. There was in them both a deep vein of Hebraic poetry and idealism. They found America homelike and were never conscious of barriers between themselves and their neighbors. My mother, Minnie Wald, had an almost childlike trust in people. I remember her bringing into the house one day a young tramp who came knocking at the door. He was busy washing our front windows when the policeman on the block arrived.
Honest, Mrs. Wald, I don't know what's going to become of you. You'll get yourself murdered in your bed one of these days.
But what have I done wrong, officer?
That man you got washing your windows, he's a criminal.
I'm scared, Mama.
Now, don't be foolish, Lillian. He's got such a nice face. Why do you say that he's a criminal, Mr. Dolan?
For the simple reason, ma'am, that he got out of jail yesterday.
What was he in jail for?
Stealing.
That's bad.
People really shouldn't steal, of course.
Stealing is a felony punishable by law.
But he must have had some reason for taking things. I wonder how we should handle this.
Well, the only way to handle his kind is to boot him out right away.
But if I don't hire him, nobody else will.
And he'll have to steal some more to get money for food.
Well, that's not your lookout.
Oh, I'm sure you're right in your own way, but I just can't be happy when people around me are unhappy. I think I have a solution to this problem. Young man, will you please step down from that ladder for a moment?
Okay.
Thank you. And now come over here, please. Oh, you needn't be afraid of Officer Dolan. He came to tell me that you'd been let out of jail for stealing. Now, I don't want you stealing my things. So if there's anything you see around here that you need, you tell me, and I'll give it to you.
The saints preserve us. Mrs. Wald, do you know what you're doing?
Why, of course I'm removing from him the temptation to steal.
But Mrs. Wald...
It's very practical. Well, you just go right on with your work, young man, while I show Officer Dolan to the door.
Giving of oneself and one's possessions was as natural to the Wald as breathing. If Lillian was a spoiled child, as she has said, she was one who very early learned that you can't be happy in a world where other people are unhappy. You have to do something about it.
I was 18, and I was finished. By finished, I mean I had gone to one of those private schools whose object it is to transform their pupils into elegant young ladies. I had been taught French and ballroom dancing and how to twist young men about my little finger. Now, I bided my time, as if waiting for my real life to begin. Quite by accident, if there is such a thing as accident in one's life, I met a young woman who had done nurse's training at Bellevue Hospital in New York. She opened the window for me on a new world. In some ways, a terrible world.
But hospitals are terrible places, Lillian. People go there to die.
They're changing, Mama. And nurses aren't like Sari Grant anymore. They don't choke their patients to make them take their medicine.
Oh, but New York's so far away from Rochester. And you'd be all alone in that big city.
Not for long. You know how easily I make friends.
Oh, I know. Everything's always so easy for you. I don't think you could stand the hardship of a nurse's life.
Let me try. Say yes, Mama. If you say yes, Papa will too.
No one's ever said no to you. I don't know why I think I can start now. I only hope you know what lies ahead of you.
No one ever knows, Mama. Did you and Papa know when you came over here?
whoever knows what lies ahead. In those days, a hospital was often the place of no return. The clanging of the ambulance bell struck terror in people's hearts. There were no drugs to stop gangrenous infection or to reduce its raging fevers. Women bled to death in childbirth. Strong men screamed aloud in their agony. And children drooped and died like flowers picked too soon. At New York Hospital, where Lillian Wall did her nurse's training, her hands laid upon a burning forehead were often the only analgesic for pain. The record shows that she was graduated on March 31st, 1891, and that from there she went to the juvenile asylum on 176th Street to begin her independent nursing career.
Dear Mama and Papa, I have been thinking of you all day. When I contrast my own happy childhood with the way these waifs here at the asylum are treated, my blood boils. Today, a little boy was crying with a toothache, and the asylum dentist was about to yank it out without even examining it. I grabbed the child, and I put myself between him and the dentist.
What do you think you're doing, young woman?
You can't take out a child's tooth like that without even looking inside his mouth.
Stand aside, or I'll have you reported.
No, I won't let you do this.
Who are you? How dare you tell me my business?
I'm a human being. How would you like for somebody to yank out your front tooth when maybe it could be saved?
I can have you fired for this.
I know, but I wouldn't be worth my salt if I didn't speak up. And there's no one else to speak for Billy, you know.
Open your mouth, boy. I'll just take a look at the tooth, see if there's anything we can do to save it.
Thank you, Doctor.
Never mind. You'd better learn to tend to your own business, young woman, or you won't get very far in this world.
That depends where I want to go. Sir.
Miss Wall, you're a good nurse. But what happened today is inexcusable.
Dr. Welk was wrong.
That's beside the point.
I saved Billy's tooth.
Nevertheless, you broke a fundamental rule. A nurse doesn't give orders, she obeys them.
I can't be a cog in a machine.
Maybe you should go into private nursing.
Oh, I don't want to be just a nurse for the rich.
But you're young and very intelligent. Have you ever thought of becoming a doctor?
A doctor?
Mm-hmm.
A woman doctor?
It's a new field. You would encounter much prejudice, but if you're interested, the Women's Medical College here in the city is accepting women students.
Where is it? The medical college?
Oh, wait a minute. Think about it. Don't rush off half-cocked with your cap askew and the hairpins falling out of your hair.
But I'm old. I'm 23. I haven't time to waste. What is the address?
She entered the Women's Medical College that same year. But by another of those accidents that marked her life, she never got to be a doctor. A woman named Mrs. Solomon Loeb had time and money to help the poor of New York City. She asked the medical college for a volunteer to go down to the Lower East Side and teach a group of immigrant mothers the fundamentals of hygiene and sanitation. Lillian Wald left the dead body she was dissecting and took a horse car downtown. The address was Henry Street.
I found myself in a jungle. The year was 1893. And here, between the North and East Rivers, were crowded together, like teeth in a comb, 1.5 million human beings. 3 out of every 4 were foreign-born parents. Whole families, from grandfathers to little children, worked in the sweated industries, living in tenements of indescribable squalor. Garbage rotted in the streets. Fire and police protection were negligible. Children grew up without ever seeing a green or growing thing. The street was their playground. One blazing summer day, I was talking to my mother's class about the necessity of boiling milk in such weather, when a little girl entered the room, quiet as a shadow.
You come, please.
Come where?
You come. I will show you.
I can't leave my class. If you'll tell me where, I'll come later.
Later's too late. You come now.
The child took my hand and led me along twisting, dirty streets and into evil-smelling alleys. Through a dark doorway in a windowless room lay a woman, bleeding to death after childbirth.
My mother, she's sick. You make her well.
It is like Lillian Wall that she did not shut the door and go away to call a policeman or an ambulance or to report the case to the Board of Health. She pushed up her sleeves and got to work on the dying woman. It is also like her that she never went back to the medical college. She told her friend, Mrs. Law, that same summer day,
I don't want to go back to dissecting dead bodies. I want to work with living ones. That woman today needn't have died. I see now I ought to begin putting into practice what I already know.
You mean go back to nursing?
Yes, but in a different way. I want to move down to the east side and work with the poor.
Move to the east side? A young girl like you? Oh, it's not safe.
I'm not afraid. The people down there are just like any other people.
I admire your spirit, Lillian, but I'm afraid you're going overboard.
I'm sick of just wetting my feet in life. I want to dive in.
Not over your head, I hope.
Mrs. Loeb, will you help me?
Help you? How?
With money. You're rich, and you know a lot of rich people.
Ooh, you take my breath away. Don't you know, my dear, that you're not supposed to mention other people's money, much less ask them for it?
I don't mind asking if it's not for me. Will you give me some money?
Yes. Yes, I'll help you. And I'll speak to Jacob Schiff about you. But I still don't know whether you're addle-brained or I am.
September of that year, 1893, saw her settled with another nurse, Mary Brewster, in a tenement walk-up on Jefferson Street, plunk in the middle of one of the city's worst slums. The elegant Mrs. Loeb climbed the four flights, her long skirts brushing against the garbage in the hall.
Oh, my dear, this awful place. Was it the best you could find?
No, but it was the cheapest. I thought the money you're collecting should go to the poor, not to pay our rent. Oh, you don't have to be afraid of bugs. We've scrubbed it from bottom to top with disinfectant.
And just look at your hands.
Never mind my hands. I'm not the divine Sarah. We're going to hang curtains and pictures and show our neighbors that even a tenement can be cheerful.
But will they come to you for help, I wonder? These people, most of them, don't even speak English.
Pain is a universal language. I learned that in the hospital.
But down here, they tend to hide their pain for fear they'll be taken to the hospital.
I know. They still believe that old story about the black bottle that they give to people in hospitals who are too slow in dying. But they'll come to us because we'll be more than nurses.
More in what way?
We'll be neighbors. Friends. Listen to that. Come in!
Lillian, take care. It might be some Bowery bum.
And it might be the prophet Elijah. Come in, I said. The door's open.
With that knock on the door, Lillian Wall, an unknown young woman of 26, launched a worldwide movement. But she was not thinking in terms of movements then, or ever, but of people. All around her, in rancid tenements and rat-infested alleys, were people needing help. Children with contagious eye disease. Children scarred with vermin bites. Young girl dying of tuberculosis. A pregnant mother living on stale bread and water. A man with typhoid fever. A crazy woman cared for by a daughter of 14. She saw them in her sleep.
We wore a little silver badge that said, Visiting Nurse, Auspices of Board of Health. This was our protection against hoodlums. And that first year, Mary Brewster and I must have walked thousands of miles up and down tenement stairs.
And up the four flights to their rooms on Jefferson Street, people flocked to them. They came not only with their sickness, but with troubles no medicine could cure. Troubles with the law, eviction, unemployment, hunger, despair. With the money Mrs. Loeb collected, the girls gave out shoes, bedding, food, disinfectant, soap, milk. Tickets for ice, tickets for fresh air excursions, dollars for rent, pennies for car fare. Every cent was written down in a little black book. But there was never enough. It vanished like a bubble in this sea of trouble. Word began to spread around about the two young visiting nurses. Newspapers, hospitals, private organizations came to their aid with funds. Men and women from all over the city volunteered their time, their services to help. Other nurses begged to join them.
To our amazement, we woke up one day to find we had grown right out of our boots. With sadness, we said goodbye to the tenement on Jefferson Street. We had found a solid red brick house not far away that faced the street with an open and serene expression. In the rear, there was a little yard. We decided to call it the Nurses' Settlement. The address was 265 Henry Street. Not long after we moved in, a man came to call on us.
Miss Wald, my name is Jacob Rees.
Jacob Rees? You're Jacob Rees? Oh, I wanted so much to meet you. I read your book, How the Other Half Lives, and what you wrote,
Miss Wald,
I think is...
Miss please, I came down here to talk about you. Do you realize that you started a movement here on Henry Street?
I hate that word. It sounds so cold. I don't like to think of the idea of goodwill incorporated.
Did you know that when you and Miss Brewster came to the East Side 2 years ago to work, that you were the first public visiting nurses in the world?
No, I didn't. We just wanted to help the sick, that's all. Then, as we went along, we saw that much more than sickness was involved.
What?
All the wrongs and sufferings and hopes of human beings.
In other words, in touching one little strand of the web, you touched the whole social structure. And now, where do you go from here?
I suppose I'll go on climbing tenement stairs, bathing the sick, making beds.
You're really an innocent, aren't you? Don't you know that they won't let you go on being a nurse? You'll have to delegate that to others.
And what, Mr. Rees? What will I be doing?
Oh, my dear young woman, you're in the vanguard of a crusade.
Sounds frightening.
You're bound to know now that it's not enough to cure one person of a disease if all his neighbors are infected. You have to stamp out the source of the infection.
How?
By poking your nose into places where you've no business. By shouting from the housetops above the smells you uncover. By fighting for better housing, cleaner streets, milk inspection, abolition of sweatshops.
Mr. Rees, did you know that right here on this block there's a sweatshop? That I can look out my window and see little children who ought to be in school?
You see, I told you. I'll say goodbye now. We'll be meeting again soon.
Meeting? Where?
Oh, minding other people's business.
Now I was ready to visit Henry Street myself. I had searched for and found a flesh-and-blood woman behind the mask of greatness. I went back to the red brick house, so little changed from that day in 1895 when Lillian Wald moved in. All around it, the Henry Street settlement had burgeoned. I saw the music school, the Henry Street theater, the gymnasium, and the activities building. A woman who had been there in Lillian Wald's time showed me around.
The big thing about Henry Street is what you can't see.
Oh, well, what do you mean?
The influence that it's had on the neighborhood, on the whole city, the country even. When I think of all the social changes that have come out of a handful of people meeting in our little parlor. Labor legislation, housing, sanitation, better government.
She was a great woman, wasn't she?
Well, actually, she wasn't very different from the rest of us. Except for one thing. She never took anything for granted. We all have a chance at greatness, I think. Life offers us daily a choice between the usual and the unusual. But most of us are like surgeons. We cut the greatness out of our lives. Lillian Wall didn't. Yes, I think that that's the difference.
As I left Henry Street, school had just let out and the neighborhood children were trooping into their clubs and hobby groups. I saw that since Lillian Wald's day, their faces had changed. The Jews and the Italians and the Germans and the Irish were giving way to Negroes, Spanish, and Puerto Ricans. I stopped a small Negro boy who was entering the gymnasium. Tell me, why do you like to come here?
Everybody belongs to something, man. My cousin belongs to the Masked Avengers. I belong to Henry Street. That's how it is, man.
Mm-hmm.
would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Miss Helen Hall, present director of the Henry Street Settlement, who took over from Lillian Wald when she retired in 1933. Miss Hall.
Those listeners who were moved and inspired by Lillian Wald's eager and creative beginnings on Henry Street will be happy to know that the work she started is not only going on, but has greatly expanded over the years since she opened the little red house at 265 Henry Street. To mention only a few of the changes, we now have five different centers. A beautiful new building given to us 12 years ago by Senator and Mrs. Herbert Lehman is called Pete's House, named after their son Peter, who was killed in World War II. Pete's House was built especially to serve children and teenagers. We now have an old age center and home planning workshops located in Bladdock Houses, a low-income housing project. There, 350 of our older neighbors find companionship and a stimulating program that helps keep them a contributing and active part of their own community. The first neighborhood mental hygiene clinic brings help to troubled children and their parents. A group of 600 men, who were boys in Miss Wald's day, have banded together to help support the organization, which meant so much to them in their youth. Each year, at the time of Miss Wald's birthday in March, they give their biggest event, where they get together not only to raise money, but to share in a fellowship which has lived on throughout the years. The Henry Street Visiting Nurses, who started when Lillian Wald first visited her neighbors so long ago, now serve the sick in Manhattan, the Bronx, and Queens. This idea of Miss Wald's to bring care into the homes of the poor, as she had done it herself, has spread everywhere in our own country and has become a worldwide movement. Young women from all over the world come to get training at what is now called the Visiting Nurse Service of New York. Lillian Wald's genius combined many qualities, not only the warm response of a generous heart and a creative mind, but wisdom and statesmanship. What could be more rewarding to her than having started a living work?
Thank you, Miss Hall. Our Eternal Light drama today, The Search, was written by Virginia Mazur and was based in part on the book Lillian Wald, Neighbor and Crusader by R.L. Dufus, published by the Macmillan Company. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Marion Seldes was featured as Lillian Wald. Others in the cast were Athena Lord, Florence Williams, Beatrice Pons, Bill Zuckert, Roger DeCoven, Bill Martell, Helen Gerald, and Gary Kolb. The narrator was Carl Weber. This is Fred Collins speaking. Our program was directed by George Voutsos. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America.
This is the NBC Radio Network.